gonna rock the shade, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout, make you shout, make you shout.
And now, here is an indie blues double shot from our featured artist today, the McNamara Project. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
We all got something. If you caught me in a lie, and you just don't wanna roll with me, think it's time we say goodbye. And if you wanna get away, yeah, here's what you're gonna hear me say. And if you wanna run, run with me. If you wanna fly, baby, be set free. If you wanna go, you know that I'll be. And if you wanna run, baby, oh, oh, come on, run with me. I'm done talking, now there's nothing to say. I'll be two steps behind you as you walk. If you ever wanna run, say we're through or say we're done. And you just don't wanna roll with me if you say I'm not the one. And if you wanna get away, yeah, here's what you're gonna hear me say. And if you wanna run,
was the McNamara Project from their brand new release, and we got John McNamara on the line right now. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Richard, and lovely to talk to you again. Thanks for having us on.
Well, thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on the line. Now, let's talk a little bit about the history, how you guys got started. So give us the story of the McNamara Project.
Yeah, well, it's, see, I'm based down here in Australia, and so is Andrea Marr. We live a few hours apart down in Victoria, Australia, and we've known each other for a long time. We've both been on the blues scene. Our paths have crossed over the years, and we became good friends, and I've been a fan of her voice for many years. And it wasn't until I released an album called Rollin' With It back in, I think it was 2017, and my publicist at the time was a chap named Frank Rozak, and he did a great job getting the album out there, and it reached number one on the contemporary blues charts and a few things like that. And about the same time, Andrea Marr was releasing an album called Natural, and she also used Frank Rozak. She wanted to know who I was using to get the word out so well overseas. And it took an American, Frank, to say, "Boy, you two are really the male and female version of each other. If you guys get together, there'd be nothing else like you on the scene." And we thought, man, it's something we never considered, you know. And taking his advice, we actually met up at a festival, kind of backstage, and we thought, let's just sing a song a cappella. And as soon as we did it, we knew there was some magic. The way our voices just, you know, the timbres of the voice, the way we would phrase, it just clicked straight away. And we didn't look back after that. The next thing we did was enter the Blues Challenge down here at Melbourne without having a rehearsed act, without really having much material. We kind of wrote it on the fly and somehow won the damn thing and got sent over to Memphis. And from there on, we just kept running with it.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the new release. When you guys were putting this together, what was your goal for this?
Well, the funny thing was, we released our first album, Holler and Moan, just before the pandemic. And we did that with a bunch of the guys, you know, Stax Records legends played on it. We had Willie Two Big Hall from the Blues Brothers movie on drums, and Lester Snell, did a lot of the arrangements and sort of teed them up over there. So off the back of that, we had all these big plans of touring, all these great doors were opening, and then lockdowns happened. And we all know how that turned out. We sat around thinking, oh boy, what next? And just to keep ourselves sane and to keep relevant on social media, etc., Andrew and I started doing a couple of like ISO projects where, you know, we wrote a track and we'd record remotely, you know, enlist a great drummer who had home recording capacities. I had a good little home studio anyway, and we put together a song. And it came up fantastic. Radio started playing it. We did another one. Next thing you know, we thought, boy, we're actually unintentionally making a sophomore album, and it was turning out really good. So that was how the album was sort of born, was from these incredibly long lockdowns we had here in Victoria. As a matter of fact, Melbourne was the longest lockdown city in the bloody world. How about that?
Wow. Okay. Now, let's talk about your processes as songwriters, you and Andrea. When you sit down to begin, you know, writing a song, what do you do that allows you to tap into that muse?
Yeah, well, speaking for myself, I've always found the best songs were the ones that would kind of come to me before I have a guitar in my hand. And I'd usually hear the whole song in my head, you know, the whole arrangement, that kind of thing. They're usually the best ones, and they usually happen quick. I find the good ones kind of write themselves really quick. And so generally I try to hear the song in my head to such an extent where I can get my mobile phone and mumble and hum out as much of it as I can to capture it before I lose it. And then finally, you know, I'll pick up the guitar and try to figure out, you know, what the chords are, all that kind of thing. That's generally how it happens. Every now and then I would come up with a riff first, but that's pretty rare. To be honest, it comes from hearing the whole picture in my head, if that makes any sense at all. But I think Andrew is much the same. I mean, when we got together to do this album, we started doing regular Skype sessions through the lockdown where we'd get together once a week or maybe twice. And we'd sit there for an hour, and one of us would bring in like an idea for a song. And we both had tons of them on our phones, you know, yeah, much the same kind of process. You'd have, look, I've got this melody, I've got this chorus spinning around. And by the end of that hour, the song would be written. Andrew is amazing at writing lyrics, which is my weak point. So it was a perfect match where we could sit there and just nut out a song each week. And the process would be a lot of fun working together, and I would say it would certainly make it easier. We kind of tended to agree on everything and just made the process a lot quicker.
Okay.
Two heads were better than one, for sure.
Okay. Now, you had mentioned that you had, you know, tons of ideas on your cell phone. A lot of songwriters have really embraced technology as part of their toolkit, whether it's their cell phone or a home recording studio or, you know, even software like, you know, BandLab or MasterWriter or whatever. What are some of the tools that you have in your toolkit that you found really indispensable to you as a writer?
Yeah, the main thing would be just my acoustic guitar. I did everything on the acoustic guitar and my mobile phone. They were the two main things. But then the next step would be, you know, obviously in isolation and lockdowns, would be using my home studio. But that would always come as a kind of final piece when it was time to demo the song, you know, for the other players. So once we had the idea figured out, and you know, Andrew and I would work on the song and get the structure and everything to the state we're very happy with it, then I would go to my home studio, put it to a click, get the groove, you know, get everything kind of laid out as well as I can to then send it to the rhythm section to lay it down. And then there'd be a process. Thank goodness we had the long lockdowns in a way, because we had the luxury of time to say to some of these players, oh, look, we're after something a little bit different. We can go backwards and forwards and then layer the track from there. So, it's all, everything, as you said, technology, all had a place, but I would always start with acoustic guitar and that little, you know, that little song in my head. So it did start very organic and then got more and more technical to complete the process.
Okay. Now, it sounds like your Skype sessions with Andrea were very productive and extremely efficient on how you created these songs. But, you know, you always got to get to that point where you say, okay, this is done in the writing phase. It's now ready to, you know, move into production, give it to the musicians and the producer to kind of let them put their fingerprints on it. What do you guys do to determine that moment when the song is ready to be given to the band?
Basically, if the demo is good, like, you know, the demo has to have that kind of vibe. Otherwise, you know, I think no matter how good the band is, if you give them a dud demo, they're just going to kind of build on top of that. So it always had to have enough energy, it had to have the right groove, obviously the right... everything had to be in place. So we tried to get the demos kind of as neat as we could and really sell in, you know, the complete picture. The other thing we'd like to do is give them a reference. You know, for instance, there's one song on the album called The Right Temptation, which is the last one we did. And we really wanted a stack sound for that. With a lot of the album, we kind of got a lot of different sounds. We've got some traditional blues, some gospel, that kind of thing. But this one in particular, we said, in the verse, kind of like Sam and Dave's, you know, I thank you, we want the drums to be, after knowing like it did, we kind of gave him that reference and said, that feel, that vibe. So I think all those little pieces really helped us to sort of get the point across. But every song was different as well. You know, that's another interesting point, that some songs we didn't have a reference, we kind of just had the demo only. So yeah, every song's quite individual on this album. I think it's because of the way we recorded it over a length of time.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the lineup on this. Who's playing on it?
Yeah, once again, very different. When we did the Holler and Moan album, we had the, you know, the same players in the room live together and doing it all within a few days, where this one being spread out over the entire bloody pandemic, we got to use a lot of different players. We had Mark DiGiorgio doing most of the drums on the album. He's a fantastic drummer with a really good home studio as well, so it just worked out beautifully. Dave Reynolds was an important part of it, who's another Melbourne musician. Andrew Fry on bass, who's our live bass player as well. Dave Clark on drums as well. Ezra Lee, who's an amazing, very Jerry Lee Lewis kind of, you know, inspired piano player, brought a lot of heat to it. Ollie Ralph, Richard Tankard, also on keys. And then we had Andrew Houston and Sean Vadge doing the horns and layering all the horn parts on it. And the last piece of the puzzle, who was very integral, was a producer called Mark Kia, who lives near Andrea down in Melbourne in the city. And Andrea would be able to record her vocals there when she was allowed to leave her 5K radius that was imposed on her so often. Every time that was lifted, she could get into his studio, and he's like a young rapper, hip-hop kind of artist, but just exceptional ears, and he gets this genre as well. And Mark here did add some keys and his magic touch all over this album, especially in the mixing process. So it's quite a big team this time, and man, I don't know how we pulled it off, but it sounds like everybody's in the room sweating and just jamming. We really got lucky on it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, you know, because going into the studio really kind of helps give the song and the artist their identity. It's the sound that you create in that environment. And obviously you were doing this pandemic style where you were slinging stems around the internet and kind of combining them into, you know, that final mix. Did you find that a satisfying way to work, or just was it a hindrance? Is it kind of hurt what you were looking or you were going after?
Yeah, that's something that neither of us would have chosen. You know, if it wasn't something we were forced into, it wouldn't have actually happened. But the fact that we did it, man, I'm sold on it. I loved it because I live, you know, a few hours out of the city. I live in the middle of bloody nowhere, beautiful little town called Clunes. And, you know, for me to be driving in and out of studios and doing that kind of thing, and as well as the money side of it, would mean I got a very small window to cut vocals, you know, or to lay down guitar or something. But doing it from home in my own studio, I could go backwards and forwards and, you know, think, no, I can sing that better. I'm going to sing that damn verse again. I'm going to try to sing that note even higher. I wonder if I can hold that scream longer. You know, all these kind of things you can start toying with and being more experimental because you've got the luxury of time and you don't mind coming across like a dickhead and hitting a wrong note if no one else is listening to you in a booth. So all those little things made the album exciting for me, and I love to be able to have that luxury of time. And something we've found when we're doing a lot of interviews here in Australia when the album, you know, just been released, and people keep saying, this album's got so much energy. Like, you know, it does not sound like an ISO album. And I can imagine this process could easily fall on its ass and not work if you didn't have the right players that don't have that kind of rapport. But Andrew and I know each other well, and we know not to hold back. We know how much energy comes across live. And that was their kind of main focus, was to bring that into the next studio album. We wanted to bring that live energy.
Okay.
But we did it. Yeah, we caught it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the future of the industry a little bit. We both know that over the course of the last 20 years, you know, the consumer has really embraced streaming. It's the way that we consume music today. I mean, we're not going to fight it. We're not going to change it at this point. We have to accept it and deal with it and somehow create our revenue streams around that. But the fact is that the consumer, because of the way they're consuming music today, no longer looks at recorded music as a product to purchase. It's now a service that they expect on their phone 24/7. You know, if they hear about an artist, they look them up on Spotify, listen to everything that artist has ever done, and then they could decide whether they like them or not. How has this new perception by the consumer affected you as an artist?
Yeah, look, it's something I've been thinking about a lot. I mean, Andrew and I both released CDs prior to joining up, and it's the same thing. Every album we're releasing it's getting harder and harder to push at shows. There's less, you know, pre-orders as they're coming out because, as you said, everyone's streaming, and I'm the same. I've got a new car that doesn't have a CD player in it, and I've become that guy, and I've got a massive CD collection that I'm having trouble listening to because I just don't have a player, you know, in the car. And yeah, look, it is a big issue. You start wondering how the heck you're going to pay for all these things, and it's such a big investment making a CD. So you just, it's just got to be something to help push shows. It's got to be something to help keep you relevant and to get that momentum into your career. But yeah, look, I'm the same as a lot of people where you wonder how many more CDs do you have in you?
Right.
How many more albums do you have in you? Because it's even doing it from home and doing remotely, the costs still add up. And it's not like it used to be, man. It's we miss those days. But I think it's just a case of, you know, evolving and finding ways to be more entrepreneurial perhaps, and sort of ride it through somehow. Yeah.
Well, you know, I also found it interesting how the consumer, not only are they purchasing or consuming music differently, they're also listening to it differently. It's a different mindset. You know, in my day, I mean, I'm an old guy. You know, I remember the days of vinyl where it was a commitment to listen to an album. You know, you put it on, you would listen to it from beginning to end, flip it over, listen to the other side. Even with CDs, you would put an artist into that player. And it wasn't like you created single playlists. You know, you listened to that artist for the continuation of that CD. Today, people are creating these playlists that are more or less a soundtrack to their life or their activities. So it really frees up an artist to be more diverse because you can fit into more, how can I say, life scenarios, if you know what I mean. What do you think of that mentality as far as how people are listening to music?
Yeah, well, I think it's just going to kill the artistic side of, you know, of albums and collections of songs, and I don't see a lot of good in it personally for that kind of thing. I mean, it's fair enough to make a playlist of your favourite songs, like, you know, to suit certain moods, but there's something really special about the way bands in the past would make an album that, as you said, it's a whole journey. They don't need every song to be, single potential even. You know, they would deliberately make an album that would have a flow to it and would take a listener from here to there. And then side B might be completely different to side A intentionally. And I think all those things were beautiful. And it's something that's going to get lost. I'm still at the stage of just trying to, you know, make a good collection of songs. And on this particular album, we've certainly got a, you know, even though we recorded over such a long period, it all works beautifully together because our voices, the way we play it, and it fits together lovely. I just hope people will listen to it as an album and listen to every track on it. And that's your only concern when it's a streaming platform. You think, oh boy, they're just going to listen to the first couple of singles, because we've got some gems hidden down in here, including a beautiful soul medley of ballads to finish with. I do hope that those listeners will go through and listen to every track like they would have if they brought a copy back in the day.
Now, we're moving quickly in the music industry. We know things change so fast. I mean, you know, you just look at the last 20 years with the digital revolution. I mean, it has redefined the industry several times over. And we're now going into this world of decentralized music industry, where record companies are going to be a thing of the past. Distributors are going to be a thing of the past. I read this article in Billboard magazine about how they looked at the music industry, and only about 12% of the generated income actually gets routed back to the content creators themselves, the musicians, the songwriters. And in many industries, that's just an abomination. You know, the sports industry gets, you know, they get 45 to 50% of the generated income gets funneled back to the athletes. So the music industry is really disparaged as far as how the money's divvied up, because there are so many middlemen in the industry. And this new technology of blockchain streaming is really promising to kind of give that power back to the musician, where they're going to be getting 90% of the generated income. This world of NFTs allows artists to sell, you know, a portion of their business to their fan base and allow them to take a vested interest into, you know, their success. What do you think of this technology going forward? Do you think that this is a good direction for the industry?
I think it's needed. I think for the industry to survive and thrive, I think it has to happen. And admittedly, it's something I know not enough about. And I certainly need to educate myself on it further, but we need something. I mean, Spotify's really got us all by the balls, and I think there's enough creatives out there that see that there's another way. And I think once that starts happening, there'll be a tipping point where everyone's just going to jump ship. If there's a better offer out there, we're all going to go for it, and hopefully that'll see a whole new dawn for the industry, and we can actually start making a little bit more money and giving that control back. I think that'd be a wonderful thing to happen, Richard, and I think it's great that you're out there and educating people like myself so much about it.
Well, you know, it's important that we stay educated, you know, especially if new technology comes up, because the sooner we adopt it and the sooner we get into it, the easier it is going to be for the fans and the consumers to kind of gravitate towards that. You'd mentioned Spotify. I mean, they created these deals with the record companies where they got a lion's share of that income, and they left the scraps for the independent artists because of the fact that they have so much power in reach as far as fan bases are concerned. They pretty much tell the independent artists, you know, hey, take it or leave it. You know, it's, you know, you know, they we really have not a lot of choice into how the money's being distributed. Now, you know, the other thing is that when the pandemic hit, a lot of artists started to go online and they started to create live shows, you know, live streaming. They started to work their social media because, let's face it, they had time now. And they started to put up things about their lives and about, you know, their other activities and interests beyond the music itself. And they started to realize that the fans really gravitated towards that, that the fans enjoyed that reality show mentality that they got by seeing the artist in their natural world and doing things that that humanizes them and makes them part of, you know, some way of connecting to them as fans. What are some of the things that you're doing that help you with your brand and getting it out there?
Yeah, I'm probably not doing enough of what you just mentioned there. We're keeping we're doing a lot of like film clips and a lot of I think every song off this album is going to have a film clip, which is kind of exciting. But it's funny what you just mentioned then. It made me think. Andrew and I had this chat not long ago. Sometimes you put up a little clip where you're just singing in your kitchen or you're doing something really daggy and the engagement goes crazy. You know, yeah. You're sitting here singing a little lullaby to my, you know, to my daughter or my pet or something, and you go, oh boy, so many people comment and like that. Then we put out a whole slick film clip to another song and you kind of sit back and go, oh wow, that kind of... you know, it didn't get the same response, and I think it's something, you know, us artists have got to remember that it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be trying to give the impression of doing something more grand. But yeah, people do like that you know, that intimate kind of behind the scenes look, and I think it's something I've got to embrace a little bit more too, because I'm quite a private guy, and very rarely will I do anything on my social media that isn't music related, and if it is, it may be me singing a high note or doing something silly in my kitchen, and they do seem to work. So yeah, once again, man, I think that's a good point and one that I should take to heart and engage in that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think people want authenticity. They want to have that feeling that they're privy to a real moment that's happening behind the scenes, you know, as opposed to seeing a slick presentation. They want to feel that they're privy, you know, to something unique. You know what I mean?
And the funny thing is, you're probably finding a lot of the acts, I'd say, you know, the big successful acts are probably spending less because they understand that mentality. And then you got the smaller acts still trying to spend money to look like the top line acts.
Yeah.
Well, we can all save a penny at the moment and just, you know, flip that little camera around on the phone and get the message out there easily. So, yeah, no, I hear you, man. It makes sense. And I certainly enjoyed through the pandemic looking into some of these, like you said, you know, in the private lives of some of these great entertainers and watching them perform from the homes. That I thought that was really exciting, especially at the start of the pandemic. After a while, it got a little bit old, I thought, but at the start, I found it intriguing, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this. Turn up loud. Screw the neighbors. We're going to have some fun.
Another night alone. You know right now. It's so very hard to dream. I can't see the future, Lord.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, huh?